Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome. Day one. Worlds is here. I'm not going to lie. Did not expect day one to have that much drama in a women's 10K and a mixed 4x4 with the same country. But before we get into any of that, welcome to the Flow Track Podcast. I'm your host, Gordon. If this is your first time listening, welcome. If it's your 629th time listening, I appreciate that. But first of all, I want to introduce our guest co-host for all of Worlds, Olivia Ekpone, who works on the mile split side here at Flow Sports. She's been, how long have you been at Flow for?
Technically 5 years since I actually started out with Flow Track back in 2018. That's where it all began.
Oh, wow.
And then March of 2020, I shifted over to mile split. So technically five, but been with mile split for 3, going on 4.
Yeah, you used to do a show with Kevin though, right?
Yes, every Monday.
Yeah. And Lincoln.
Yeah.
And Lincoln. So you were you were the original me. You were doing a show with Kevin and Lincoln before I was doing a show with Kevin and Lincoln.
Yes.
So this is like full circle. Yep. This is a full circle.
This is definitely full circle for me. Feels so good to be back.
It's a hell of a first podcast to be part of too, with what just happened at the end of this afternoon. But welcome. I don't know what else. What else can you tell? You're Olivia. You like track. You ran track. You went to A&M, right? Anything else?
Texas,
I don't know.
A&M, 12-time All-American. Now training for a half marathon in October. So keeping all the running wheels intact.
So between the two of us, we have 12 All-American status, right?
Yes.
The podcast is 12-time All-American between the two of us. So that's good.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll have enough time to go over more about with Olivia as we learn throughout these next 9 straight days. 9 days in a row. How are you preparing for dealing with 9 straight days of track and field? Like, is there like a routine?
Lots of sleep. There's been a lot of, I feel like a lot of sleeping is going to be happening here.
Did you
early
did you
mornings
stay up
too?
Did you stay up? Did you watch the early morning races?
Yes, the alarm went off at 4:30, and thank goodness, because I guess, you know, there was a weather delay happening in Budapest, so I was able to watch everything from the very beginning, had that little break, took a quick power nap, and watched the evening section.
I'm not going to lie. I looked at day one morning session, and I saw the heats. I was like, I don't know if I need to watch this part live. So I didn't watch the
steeplechases live. Are you a true track fan then? If you were not up when this started?
No, a true track fan knows that the races are going to be boring, and it's better to sleep than to watch Jakob Ingebrigtsen win the first round of a 1500. So, you know, so I was trying to prioritize my time because I want to be able to put it all into the podcast, all into this afternoon session. But enough of that. Let's talk about the first event, not the first event, the last event, the mixed 4x4, which USA, we're not too good at this event. How many years? This is the third year we've done it. It's the third because Olympics and last year, right? This is three.
Yeah, I think this is the third.
There's no one in 2019, but we always lose. We don't know how to do it. We always put together a weird 4x4. Our best 400 meter runners are all like not doing it because they want to focus on the individual events. And it was kind of setting up for that here when Matthew Bolling got the stick and we're like, all right, Femke Bol is on the anchor for the Netherlands. Bolling is going to have to build a lead because there's no way our B-tier U.S. women are going to be able to beat arguably one of the top three fastest 400 meter runners in the world. Like there's no shame in that. It's no shame in losing to Femke Bol. So when Bolling got the stick, we're like, all right, let's see what he's got. Long collegiate season. Doesn't get the lead. If anything, he kind of loses it a bit. He kind of gets us in. I felt like it was over. I considered getting up from the TV and just walking and be like, all right, we lost. Femke Bol is going to throw down a 49 or 48. But you told me to keep watching because you knew the result before me because of our tape delay. What happened there, Olivia? What happened to Femke in that final 50 meters?
Well, the last 50, I feel like we're going to talk about the 10K in just a little bit, but I feel like we got to like sweep up the 50 meter spot. Like something's going on with that one spot on the track that like everyone just took a plummet and Bol took and hit the track there. And I'm sitting here, we're both sitting there like, what did we just witness in the world champ? This is the world championships battling it out. But Alexis Holmes was able to just cross that finish line and the U.S. won the title. I must say, I have to give a huge shout out to Justin Robinson, who I felt like even during the prelims ran an exceptional leg. And I really felt like he helped put that U.S. in that gold medal position. And so shout out to him. Doing great things, and Alexis Holmes just brought it home. But seriously, we need to look at that 50 meter mark, and someone needs to like scrub it with some soap, sweep it, something, because there's something weird about that spot, Gordon. Well, that's what happened.
So here, I need to apologize to Alexis Holmes because I was like, be USA runner, you're not beating Femke Bol. But I'm looking at these splits. Alexis Holmes split 48.8.
Goodness.
That is insane.
Alexis Holmes 48? Was not messing around.
I mean, that makes sense, I guess, because Femke Bol probably was running 49, 48 second pace until she fell in the final, on that final lap. They ended up DNFing. They didn't even finish. So we have no idea what her split would have been. But this wasn't USA got the win because Netherlands fell. Yes, technically that is why, but it's not like Alexis Holmes got lucky with only having to run 50 seconds. She ran 48.8. That is better. That's equal to what any of our top four U.S. women would run. Justin Robinson split 44.4. That's probably in the same caliber of what a healthy Ryde Benjamin would run. Ryde Benjamin probably run a little faster, but, 44.4 is good. But yeah, the official splits were Robinson 44.4, Rosie Effiong. How do I say her last name? Effiong?
I think it's Effiong. Yeah.
Effiong 50.3. Bolling ran only 45.13. And then Holmes 48.82.
And here's another thing. This is how it should be. Like, Bol was also out in front, right? So Alexis Holmes had to play catch up. And when you're following someone like Bol, like you have to put out a great split. And I don't feel like Alexis Holmes shied away from that competition. So as soon as they were coming around that turn, Alexis Holmes was still within striking distance as well. And so with all that being said, I'm honestly not surprised by the 48 second split. When you have Bol out in front of you, you got to chase the woman down, And she was,
You could argue if USA had a bigger lead and Holmes was playing chase away, keep away, she probably might have run slower because she probably would have been more in her head. She's like, oh, Bol's coming. Maybe just doesn't have the consistent race plan and probably only runs like a 50. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should thank Bolling for running slow to set up for Alexis Holmes to beat Bolt. That's my thoughts. Also, it was a world record, which no one knows because world records in mixed relays don't really mean anything. But who had Matthew Bowling being a world record holder at this meet in 2023?
Yeah, I feel like it's too early. Like, congratulations. However, it's, you know, not run as often. So it's like, okay, cool.
Hey, 3 years.
I do enjoy watching it, though. It's interesting. I know with Corey Mall on the mile split side, like, we go back and forth on, like, how we would want to run it and who would be our all-star team. Like, we talk about it quite often. So I'm happy it's, you know, at the World Championships and we're able to contest it. And it's great. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. I've always been hating.
What are your thoughts on it? Do you like it?
I hate it, but I like it when we win. So I'll be a hypocrite and I like it. I like it today. I am a huge mixed 4x4 fan on August 19th, 2023. Tomorrow, all the way through the Olympics and next year's world, the 2025 Worlds, I'm going to hate it. I'm only going to like it one day, and it's only on the days that USA wins. I am being honest. I'm a hypocrite, but that's just how I'm going to be. So, yeah. Any other thoughts on the 4x4? What's the chat saying? Chat's all over the place. Gordon, please stop sounding so stupid. Classic. They're talking about Omanyala, talking about the 100. The real AJC said Holmes put pressure on Bull. David Shun said Femke was close enough to the finish that the baton went across the line.
That's true. I did say that, right? I was like, dang, the baton literally just like all that force and momentum, it just like flew out there. Yeah.
This is a funny, F. Montano said too much weed for the Dutch, LOL. Yeah, it wasn't a good day for the Dutch, especially because who would have thought that the women's 10K would predict the mixed 4x4, because we saw the exact same thing happen to another Dutch athlete in Stefan Hassan. What are your thoughts overall on that women's 10K?
Goodness gracious, where to begin? I, first of all, was very impressed with just how Monson performed. I'm a huge fan of also Natasha Rogers. She's also a former teammate of mine. We ran together at Texas A&M. But the fact that, like, you're watching it, and it's just, it started out so slow. And, of course, Hassan is, you know, in the back where she's been. That's how she ran the 1,500-meter prelims, too. In the back.
That's how she runs everything. That's how she ran the marathon.
Yeah.
That's how she ran the marathon.
Out, you know, doing her thing, just, like, watching everyone put in the work. And then all of a sudden, like the last 800 meters, the pace just dramatically picked up. And then it became a race to watch. Final lap, Hassan is doing her thing. And you just see her picking up people. And then all of a sudden, it's just like Ethiopia. And then here comes Hassan. And then again, 50 meter mark. I don't know what it is. Unfortunately, Hassan just hits the track. My heart sinks. And the three Ethiopians just cross the finish line. 1, 2, 3, sweep. It was just wild.
So my first thought was, there was like this moment when you're thinking, I'm dying, I'm choking. Sorry. Got something in my throat. When there was like two laps to go, and you're like, there's like 8 to 10 women. You're like, oh, this is going to be a great race.
Yeah.
But then there was a moment, I think it was 300 meters to go, where you just saw two different caliber of athletes. You saw mainly the three Ethiopians and Hassan, and then everyone else. Like, yes, there was a moment when Monson was still in it, and you're like, oh, maybe Monson can catch fire and sneak onto a third place spot. But there was so much separation in that final 300. It made it seem like, why do we even watch a 25 lap race? Like, what are we doing? It really was who can run a fast 300. The previous 24.3 laps were kind of just like window dressing. And the real thing was watching that, because it was, Monson was in it. I was like, oh man, she's up there. She's in, she was some elbowing, and then boom, 250 to go. Nope. Goodbye. It was like, there was two different gears, and seeing Hassan, who again won the marathon this year, was kicking it. It looked like she was going to win. Doesn't know how to run in a straight line. She's had some issues with running in straight lines in previous world championships with her elbows. She runs with her elbows out, And I think there was some controversies with leading into lane two and three, a few like indoor championships and gets with Laura Muir. I think that was a thing. It was a big controversy back in like 2019 or something. But Hassan, here's a question. Did Hassan pull it's better to fall than to get second?
No. She was moving. She the way she was competing did not give me that impression. Like, she was going for it. And I think honestly, her legs gave out.
Yeah, her legs gave out. But, like, she... I don't know. I feel like there was a little bit... Like, once you know... I think there was a moment when she knew, I'm not going to have it. So your body just goes into, like, fight or flight mode. And she went into flight mode.
I think she remained in fight mode the whole time.
You think?
I don't think there was any there. I don't think there was ever a moment of flight. I think she, going into these championships, had the mindset of, I'm bringing home three gold medals, and I'm going to do everything it takes to get those three medals. And I feel like if she, I don't think there was a flight mode. I think it was all fight, Gordon. All fight, because when she crossed the finish line, eventually her face was just like, in shock. Like, she was completely shocked.
I just don't think she was. She doesn't get comfortable when there are people on her shoulder. I saw that a lot in the indoor races. That's why she starts in lane one, ends in lane four or five. And I think the pressure of just another person not being dropped when she's in her final gear caused her to just have like a, I don't know, an out of body experience where, like, the only thing I know, I don't know how to stay. The only thing I know left is just to kind of dive. Like, your body just like gives up. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not a flight. Maybe it's like a uninduced flight. Can we agree on that? No, I don't know. I'm trying to process this in real time. It only happened like 25 minutes ago. So I didn't have enough time to prepare a speech here or like a 10 bullet point analysis of the women's 10K. It's just what my brain said. And my brain is wrong a lot, except for some things. It was right in the men's 20K race walk where I won $400. But I just didn't know how to react to it. I don't know. What are your thoughts? What are your final thoughts on that?
My final thoughts are, Hassan, like I just said, I think she gave it everything she had, and like just the last 50 meters, that finish line did not come quick enough for her. And she was just shocked. I was shocked. I think we're all pretty much shocked. And like you, I'm still trying to process it. She's probably still trying to process it as well. So it just happened so quickly. And you never want to see that happen, and it just like poofed happen. And it happened twice today. So, well, multiple times, because even in the mixed 4x4 prelims, people were just in the track. So,
Stefan trying to pull off the triple. She was trying to pull off the triple. She did fine in the 15 prelim. Doesn't do it here in the 10K. She's the 15 in the 5K up, but going up against Faith Kipyegon, world record holder in both. Is Stefan Hassan going to come up with a goose egg, no wins? She's going to have three attempts and get zero golds?
That's going to hurt.
It feels like this was her best shot. I feel like this was her best because it's the earliest in the race. Faith is not losing the 15. And if Faith isn't losing the 15, then she's going to win the 5K. So I think Stefan might not have a single gold, which is fine. She's going to get probably a second and a third in the 15 and 5K. Which is good enough.
Yeah.
Again, she's a marathoner.
At this point, you just never know. As we've seen today, you just never know.
Yeah. So I'm going to look up what the final lap was for Sagai. So her final lap, this is, they give it to me in – in 100 meter increments. I don't want 100 meter increments. I want 400 meter increments. Okay. Quick math. There we go. So she ran her, let's see, what did she ran a final 300 in? She ran her final, excuse me, doing, get the calculator out. Her last 100 was 14.04, then 13.91 plus 14.67. So she ran her last 300 in 42.6. That's and then she ran her last 400 in 59. So she closed in 59. But really, closed, the bigger thing was closing. It was 300 meters to go when they really went. So yeah, closing in 42, yeah, that's quick. 42 divided by 3 times 4. I mean, that's 56 second pace for a lap.
Yeah.
Gade gets second. She's only run twice this year. She ran the 5K in June, and then she ran World Championships here in August, which is kind of wild. You just run two races, and you get at least a silver medal. It is funny, though.
Yeah.
There's now two situations where an Ethiopian who had a chance to win a global title falls in the home stretch. You had Stefan Hassan fall here in the end of a 10K, and then in the cross-country championships, which happened back in March, Gade fell. So It's kind of – with these women in their long distances, they just – one of them is just going to fall. So we're going to probably see a fall in the women's 5K. We're going to see a fall in the women's 3K steeple. It's just fate. That's how it works. So any other thoughts? Monson ran well. Fifth place.
It's yeah, Monson ran very well. Yes. Kudos to Monson.
I thought Cranny was going to have the performance that Monson had, but because seeing Cranny beat Monson twice at USA's, I thought that would happen again. But Monson looks like she timed her season, looked at USA's as more of a, I'm just here to qualify, and put in her best effort here in this 10K game, fifth. And this is an impressive fifth. I mean,
yeah,
world record holders ahead of you. Stefan Hassan was in the race. It's very impressive.
You're just six seconds back, too, or five, you know? Like, wasn't like she was 30 seconds back. She was within striking distance of this top field here. So, yeah, Monson ran extremely well. She was, yeah, ran a very gutsy race. She made some moves I was really proud of. And, you know, I was cheering for her here, which was awesome to just see her just do her thing.
All right. Now let's get into the hundreds. Got some data points. We got some data. We've seen where everyone's form is. And I think there wasn't too much of a shock value. Yes, Charleston not qualifying, but we kind of knew that he might be hurt. But everyone else, I think you can't really take much from it. Yes, Curly lost. Yes, Lyles ran well. Yes, Coleman got beat. Yes, Seville ran a really fast PB. But I think overall, there was no big, like, game-changing realignment of who is the alpha in the men's 100. What do you think? Should we go heat by heat? How do you want to break it down?
We can do it heat by heat if you'd like to. That's totally fine. Let me...
Yes. So heat one...
Let's look this up.
Yeah.
Yes.
He wanted the men's 100. We had Zarnell Hughes runs well, 10-0, beats Ford of Jamaica, 10-01. Yeah. I don't have any commentary. Do you have any commentary about Zarnell Hughes?
No, I do not.
Yeah. He did what he's supposed to do. Good. He's has the fastest time in the year this year. He runs 10-0, gets the big Q, moves on. All right. Heat two. This was exciting, seeing Noah Lyles versus Ferdinand Omanyala.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Omanyala had an amazing start, and Lyles had an amazing close.
Mm-hmm.
But Lyles, that close is great, but he's got to remember, he's running 100 meters. He's not running 200. And eventually, you're going to run out of real estate. What was your thoughts?
You took the thought right out of my head. If he wants to medal in these championships, the start has to be on point. And of course, this is the very first round. You can get away with little things here, right? But you would think, I know for me from running experience, each round I'm working on tactical things, right? Because you're programming yourself and your brain and your rhythm to continue that momentum into that final. And if you're doing sloppy things in the beginning, now you have to be very, very intentional going into that next round. And so I feel like for Noah, yes, we all know he can close. That's very evident. He came on late the last, again, that 50 meters was just unbelievable. However, we're talking about the shortest race on the track, on the outdoor track. That start has to be on point. He cannot get left in the block. So I'm looking to see what he does in this next round. Hopefully he cleans that part up, because in that final, you know, there's so many rocket starters right now, especially on the U.S. side. You're not going to be able to medal unless that start is down and on point. So those are just my thoughts from Lyles's race.
Yeah, his reaction time was actually faster than Omanyala's. Lyles's reaction time was 0.142. Omanyala's is 0.149. But the difference wasn't the reaction. It was that first 10 meters.
It's the power. It's the power.
Yeah. And yeah, you could argue Lyles maybe was just thinking, this is round one. I got a long championships. I don't need to be doing anything crazy. I'm going to take it really easy this first 50 meters. I don't want to hurt myself. Just cruise. I'm going to be fine. I mean, the third place guy that he had to beat is, I don't know how to say his name, Itsikuri from Nigeria, ran 10:17. So he was going to be fine no matter what. And he probably knew that. Right. So he was like, all right, I can have a bad first half and still cruise. But Omiyala looked good. Lyles looked good. But we knew that. So we didn't really learn anything. The two guys who look good continue to look good. Heat three, we're going to skip. Heat three was a Charleston heat. Gets fifth.
Yeah.
There was rumors that he hurt himself at relay camp. Mm-hmm. Kind of makes sense now. Runs 10:18. Wasn't really ever in it. It's kind of wild. The USA champion doesn't get out of the first round. It shows how good USA is at sprinting, that our champion came and get out of the first round.
That's tough.
What does it? Does that show that USA is good at sprinting if your champion can't make it out of the first round? I guess it shows we're not good at sprinting, right?
Technically not good at sprinting. However, like you said,
is this a bad look or good?
I feel like if rumors were not circulating that Charleston was hurt, then yes, it looks bad. But because there's been questionable things from relay camp, you're kind of like, okay, 10:18.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
But it seems like we always have this. It's always like one American who like runs really well at USA's, or is one of our who just like either false starts or just doesn't make it to the final. Because every year, USA should have three men in the final. We will probably have three men in the final because we had the bye with Curly, but it is kind of a bummer that Charleston didn't have a chance to do what he did at USA's and see how it lined up against the international guys, because he was beating the Jamaicans in certain like invitational races. He was beating these other guys. It's not like he only raced Americans. He should have been a top five caliber guy, but just, man, timing of injuries, it's the worst.
Yeah.
Heat four, Tobogo. I was kind of, Tobogo can run, kind of ran kind of slow. A lot of the top guys were all running 10.0s or 9.9s. Tobogo, who we consider one of the potential gold medal type guys, running 10.1, I think, was a little iffy. What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's also the first round. You know, you just kind of alluded to it. Like some of these athletes, they're just trying to get by. It's top three. Just do your warm-up. Execute what you need to do. Peace out. So, I don't know. It's tough because it's the first round. Now, if we have this conversation again later after the semis, then that's a different ball game. You know what I mean? But it's tough with these first rounds, especially with some of these athletes that have it, you know, three of them to go through. First one, you're just trying to get through, shake the cobwebs out.
He's the only one, though, who ran 10-1 or even 10-0 high that was in that category of potential medalists. Like Seville, Lyles, Simbene, Omanyala, Coleman, Curley, Hughes, and Tobogo were the ones that we looked at, and Charleston technically, but he got knocked out, were the ones we all considered as one of those seven or eight is going to win the title. And so for Tobogo to be the only one of that group to not run 9-9 or 10 flat, I do think, yes, it is first round. I do think, though, that it means something. I think it means something.
What do you think it means?
I mean, I think it means he's not winning. That's what I think it means.
Okay.
I think it means he could screw up and not make the final. I think it can mean that.
Mm-hmm. I still feel like it's too early. Again, I'm just trying to line up, get the job done, and leave.
It's never too early to have a take, though. It's never too early to have a take. All right, men's heat five. This was the fun heat. Fred Curley, yes. Oblique Seville. There was a DQ. Favor Ashe got DQ'd. Ash, sorry, said his name wrong. What were your thoughts on that one?
Well, first of all, this heat took forever to go off. Like, it felt like 20 minutes. But again, they were having some technical difficulties and there was a DQ. It was just like everything that could have happened, like, happened. And the way that Seville just got out aggressively, and even with Fred Curley, it was remarkable to watch. And I think this might be an early take, but I feel like since Fred Curley is looking to defend his title, I really consider him being the favorite going into these championships based off the whole entire field besides Christian Coleman, who we'll talk about in a moment. He looked the sharpest. Completely different than what we saw with Noah Lyles, right? Like, Noah Lyles reacted, didn't have the most powerful start that we're used to seeing. Amazing finish. Curley's was the complete opposite. Got out aggressively, looked strong, cruised, and then pretty much jogged across the finish line. So that tells me, with his time that he ran of 9.99, with him putting on the brakes the last 20 meters, he was, and you just saw him take his spikes off before, you know, going, you know, through the mix zone and everything. Like, he looked the sharpest. And Seville really looked amazing too, from Jamaica, running a 9.86. And I think he was out there ready to set the tone and being like, okay, I am a competitor. I am someone that's willing to get to this final. And he potentially could be a medalist. And he really made that statement early in this round. So I think Fred, in my opinion, looked the sharpest, just how tactical he looked and just how he positioned that 100 meters.
Yeah. So Bill ran well. He ran like he ran young. He has had the experience. He got fourth last year, so there shouldn't be like he doesn't know what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to make a final. He's a medal threat. He's a gold medal threat. But for some reason, it didn't feel like, whoa, watch out for Seville. He just beat Fred Curley. It just didn't have that vibe. It had the vibe of, Seville, you're good, but Curley seems like he's sleepwalking and just runs 9-9 sleepwalking. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. I agree.
Now, our friends in Jamaica might think otherwise. They might think like, hey, our boy Seville, we're back. We just beat the world champion, Mr. Curley. I'm like, Jamaica should know. You should not brag about prelim wins and semifinal wins, right? I'm sure there was a couple times an American beat Bolt in a semi or a prelim, and all the Jamaicans were like, calm down. Congrats on winning the practice round. So, but yeah, both Curley and Seville look good. They're both gold medal contenders. Heat six, Marcel Jacobs sneaks in, but
in of his
he was third in this heat. He runs 10:15, a season's best. There was talk of, like, I saw some tweets about clap backing at people counting out Jacobs. I'm counting out Jacobs. Jacobs is not going to do what he did at the Olympics. He's not in his true form. Jacobs wasn't running 10:15 season's best in the first round at the Olympic Games. He was a much better runner then. He's not going to catch 2021 magic. I think he's going to get knocked out in the semifinals. There was nothing here. Now, if he came out here and ran like 10:03 cruising, then I'll be like, all right, watch out. Jacobs is timing his season right. But 10:15 season's best. I just don't think he's 100% his full self. So I very, very strongly don't believe he's going to advance past the semifinals.
I don't know. Do you agree, disagree? About you, but he almost looked uncomfortable. Like, it didn't look confident. It didn't look like he had fluid in his form. It looked very forced almost, and not aggressive, but not in a good way. Like, he was forcing this 100-meter time to come out. It didn't look comfortable at all. And I feel like it's going to take a lot for him to get out of the semifinals into the final round. He's going to have the best race of his season, of his career, essentially, to get into this final.
Just to make the final. It would be incredible if he made the final. I don't think he's going to. And then last, Christian Coleman, Simbene, both run well, 9.97, 9.98. Get the job done there. Again, they're two of the guys of the group of seven or eight that we all think can win a medal or even gold, because even though Fred Curley is the defending champion, Curley is not out there running 9.8s every day. So we do think there's a chance that Curley could lose, and Simbene and Coleman are both potential candidates. So both look good. That's what you want to do. You want to look like you're cruising and you can run 9.9 or 10.0 just without any effort. And we really will get an idea of who they are in the semifinal tomorrow. I'm all excited. We get the finals tomorrow, which is just like, this is great. We get it tomorrow. Don't have to wait. This conversation of who the fastest man in the world is, it's just going to be over. We have 24 hours left, and then we finally will know. I'm excited for that debate to be over. What were your thoughts, though, on that press conference quote where people were asking Noah Lyles about his 9.65, and then Curley said, if you're going to run 9.65, that means I'm running faster, or something like that. And then Lyles...
I'm all for it.
...chimed back. What do you...
I'm all for it.
Do you want to hear my opinion?
I would love to hear your opinion. Yes, Gordon.
I think it's staged. I think they're just performing. Obviously, there's that news of the Netflix show following Noah Lyles. I think Curley's doing what he's doing, because Curley is one of one. He does what he does. But I think Lyles is performing for the camera. I think he's performing for the documentary. And I think he's just trying to give good sound bites, because his producers are saying, do this, be like this, say the thing. We need action. And that's on his head. That's what I think. I think
totally
it's fake.
I disagree with you on that. I feel like Noah, similar to Fred Curley, has a huge voice, and he's not afraid to use it. And he's going to back, and I feel like he's going to back up what he says. Like, he already made the statement of the times that he's shooting for at the World Championships. We all know that. It's been public. And I think Fred was just saying his two-piece and how he felt. If you're going to run 9.65, I'm going to run faster than you. I'm beating whatever time you think you're going to throw out there. I don't think it's staged. I feel like these two are...
Again, really I don't think Curley's really staged. I think Lyles is saying these things because there's cameras on. That's my opinion.
I don't think so. Disagree.
But do you see my point, though?
Putting it out there. I see your point, yes.
Okay.
And I also think it's just probably poor timing, because, you know, with all the cameras being out. But I really think this is the true Noah Lyles. regardless if Noah allows or not.
Hey, he's backed it up. He is who he is for a reason. He's broke Michael Johnson's record, but he is not. He is still cosplaying as a 100-meter runner. He will not be viewed as an elite 100-meter runner until he gets at least a medal tomorrow. He is one of the all-time greats in the 200. You could argue second best 200-meter runner ever. But he's not in the top 10 of 100-meter runners ever. So in order for him to start being in that conversation of 100 meters, he would need to win at least silver or bronze, probably even need to win gold and run a 9.7 or 9.65, like you said. So he has the ability, but it's still a question mark. It's still a question mark if Noah Lyles can be a 100-meter runner. There's zero question he can be a 200-meter runner because obviously he's probably the second best ever at it. So, but I
you know what thought just came into my mind?
What?
I remember when Fred made the transition from being the quarter miler to the 100 and people thought he was crazy. And then boom, world champion.
Yeah, but I do think there's a difference. Like, yes, you're right. But not everyone does that. There are some people who make the transition and it doesn't work and we just don't hear about it. We only hear about the success stories. You don't hear about the...
Very true.
So, and I just think there's too many good 100-meter runners right now. Because Zarnell Hughes could win. Simbene could win. Coleman could win. Omanyala could win. Curley could win. There's so many people that I just... Hey, no one can prove me wrong. And Ollie Crow. I've eaten a lot of crow on this podcast. So I'm getting comfortable with that diet. My stomach is being able to handle the crow now. First, it was giving me indigestion. But now I'm good with my crow eating. So we'll see. We'll see. All right. We talked a lot about men's 100-meter heats. This pie.
Yeah. There was a lot to unpack
you have
there.
To keep... All right. What's the next event? Some other distance heats. You had the women's 1,500-meter heats. All three Americans got through. McGee, Johnson, and Hiltz. You actually watched this live. I just looked up the results because I was assuming that, you know, that the three Americans would be able to get through the first round. It's three rounds, so the big cut comes when they run the semis in the coming days.
Right. So it was quite interesting, you know, with the new structure now, it's top six time. And, you know, we have someone who's in the mix zone asking questions, and Hiltz was like, they like it. And they feel like it favors people to have a better finish. And so there was one interesting thing that I learned just listening from Hiltz's interview is apparently there's a cart that drives you from the warm-up area to the stadium or wherever they're picking them up from. And like, if you're not making it out of that round, you're not on the cart back. So Nikki was just kind of making a joke saying you want to make it through the round so you get that ride back. But outside of that, I felt like Hiltz like had a phenomenal performance. They knew that the first round was going to be hard and they didn't go in with a race plan and they decided that they were going to trust their gut and that worked out in their favor. So that's kind of what happened with Hiltz. Johnson felt strong, looked strong during the first round. I must say, Corey McGee made me very nervous her whole entire race because she was on the rail 99.9% of the time. And similar to what we saw in the men's 1500, essentially the whole entire field was, there was no daylight in between the individuals. Everybody was from start to finish. The last 100 was bunched up. And I was like, Corey McGee is on this rail. I hope she doesn't trip. I hope she doesn't get boxed in. And sure enough, she was able to run smart and was able to get off that rail and was able to come across the finish line within the top six. So yeah, all three Americans make it out of the first round. It was tough. And I feel like a lot of people were going to say that, especially with the new structure. But I thought it was great running.
Vissa,
the Americans.
Vissa, formerly of Ole Miss, ran 4:01. Didn't qualify because she was not in the top six of her heat. Sophia O'Sullivan of Washington, collegiate athlete, runs 4:02, also doesn't qualify because it's no small cues. I like it. I think the moment I won't like it is if there's ever a heat of death and you're like, this is not fair because of a unique situation where you could argue the seventh best runner in this heat is the seventh best runner in the entire meet. And then I feel like that would be unfair. Right. But at the same time, if you can't be top six, why should you be catered to? Because the goal is to be at least top three in the world. So, like, no one's going to be like, we're missing the seventh best runner. It's like, all right, well, they weren't going to be top three anyway. So I can see. And it, like I said, it encourages racing. It's like, the job you're done, in a race.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Get the job done.
Men's 1500. Hawker gets through. Nagus gets through. Joe Wascom does not. But I think it kind of makes Joe Wascom, he's had a wild collegiate season. So he's probably just happy to be there. He doesn't really have that experience the way Hawker and Nagus do. So Wascom still can walk out of Worlds with head on, with the high, what was it? With the head on your shoulders? What's the phrase?
Yeah.
With
their head on their shoulders.
With head on your shoulders? Yeah. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, your head on straight. Like, you're still, with your head on their shoulders.
With your head on your shoulders.
What else did, Leaving with your head on your shoulders. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Joe Wascom, he's got his head on his shoulders. Boom. So, good thing for him. But I think the biggest surprise for me was Stuart McSwain. He didn't get in. He was seventh in his heat. So the Australian doesn't get through. But all the other big guns get through. Kerr, Ingebrigtsen, the Americans, Kattir.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we got to wait till the second round for us to really see who is going to challenge Ingebrigtsen.
Yep.
Don't really have anything else on that, do you?
No, you pretty much hit it right on the nail.
Men's steeple, Bernard Kattir does not get out of the steeple rounds. The two other Americans do in unique ways. Kenny Rooks mixing it up with Bacali, who you could argue is inching closer to becoming the GOAT at the steeple.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I think, and we can look 3 years from now, we might call him Bacali the GOAT of the steeple. I know there's some fans out there who'd be like, hey, there's some guy named Ken Boy who was pretty good. But Bacali's really good. Rooks mixing up with him, wins his heat with Bacali. And Updike qualifies via protest. He falls with about a lap to go. In the final water jump, when did he fall? And he gets in on a protest. Was there anything you noticed in the steeples? No, I didn't watch it. It was at 4 a.m.
Pretty much.
I didn't watch it. I'll be honest. I didn't watch the steeples at 4 a.m.
Okay.
No, I didn't do it.
That's okay. We all know who the true track fan is between the two of us right now. So it's okay. No, you pretty much... You know, you pretty much said what needed to be said. Protest, and again, just getting out of the heats. Survive in advance.
Story of the day, even one of the big stories of the day, starting a few days ago, is Ryan Crouser, man. He wins the shot put, throws a championship record twice, almost breaks his own world record on the final throw where he had already clinched gold. But the real story starts a few days ago where he posted that he had blood clots and he was considering with his doctors and his family about whether it is not even worth it to go to Budapest. And he said, screw it. We're doing it. It's Worlds. We ain't skipping Worlds. And even though he wasn't 100%, he shows up and he gets the job done. He had every reason to be like, it's Ryan Crouser. I'm not feeling good. I am the GOAT at throwing. I have excuse. I could walk away. But no, blood clots and all, he shows up and doesn't even barely win. He massively wins, throwing almost the world record.
Insane. Absolutely nuts. And like when you watched the qualification round, I was very nervous for him because he did not look like the Ryan Crouser that we're used to seeing. It was good thing. It was a one and done thing. It was like, just make sure I hit the qualifying mark. We're good to go. We'll come back later tonight. It didn't look right. But then as the performances kept unfolding, as the series kept on going later that evening, I'm like, okay, he's adding some fire to his throws right now. And I had a chance to talk with him at trials, and he's like, everything up until this point, up until trials, everything was going great. He's been having the best training sessions. Everything's been good. He's been healthy. And then to all of a sudden hear that there's two blood clots in your calf, and you're debating whether or not to get on that flight. You're in Budapest now looking to grab another gold, and you're not performing how you're used to performing. And then on the last throw, I was literally about to turn the TV off, and it was Ryan Crouser on TV, and he launches his last throw. And I'm like, oh my gosh, did he almost break the world record, knowing everything that he just went through over the last few weeks? Just, he's a beast. I'm a true Ryan Crouser fan. If you're not a fan, you need to become one, because he's just the real deal.
My favorite thing about Ryan Crouser is the way he celebrates. He puts his hands up. He does like a Steph Curry type situation, where before the ball, the shot lands, before the shot is even at its apex, while it's still going up, he knows he just threw the 23 meters, and he celebrates. He's not like, ooh, what is it? Is it far? 25% of the way into the throw, he knows he just threw over 23 meters. He just, because his body just knows, yep, that was a goat throw. Like, he knows when he throws it up, that was amazing. You don't even have to measure it. I felt it. He feels his records. He doesn't measure them. He just feels them. And he felt it there when, on the final throw, he throws it. Again, the guy has two blood clots. He's already won. He already won the title.
Right.
And he's dealing with an injury. He still decided to throw the second throw ever. Behind himself. That's insane. Kovacs got bronze on the fifth throw. I lost money on this one. I had Oderdahl to medal at plus 250. Oderdahl got fifth, I think. I thought I almost had it, but it's okay. But Kovacs continuing to get medals. I think they said on the broadcast it's like five medals at the world championship level is like one of the most ever. So Kovacs, man, continuing to dominate. But Crouser had no – he was already given the gold, and he still decided to throw. Already given the gold, still throws. That's what we love. Heptathlon, halfway leaders can be a little misleading. Because while America is sitting at first, third, and fourth, Hawkins and Brooks, their second day projections are not as strong and more likely to finish in the 6 to 10 range, whereas Anna Hall has a big lead and is likely to win her first world title.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's, like you said, it's the first day, and so competition is going to finish up tomorrow with other events. And so I'm rooting for Anna Hall. And I know there was one point during her high jump where she just like completely ran into the bar, and like she had to get some treatment and stuff done. So should be an interesting final day tomorrow.
We forgot to do our ad read. I'm going to do the ad read right now. We're just going to, wonderful pistachios. We love them. They're amazing. And I'm just going to do his ad right now. I apologize, wonderful. We'll say your ad twice on tomorrow's podcast. I apologize. But I can tell the viewers, are you looking for a delicious, nutritious snack that packs real protein punch? Crack into a good source of protein with tasty, healthy, wonderful pistachios. Each 1 ounce serving of wonderful pistachios contains 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. It's one of the highest protein nuts out there. But that's not all. Pistachios are also known for their fiber and are better for you. They're known for their fiber and better for you unsaturated fats, which may help you keep your feeling fuller longer. So they help you feel full. And the best part, wonderful pistachios come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on your summer adventures, take them to Budapest with you. So whether you're dropping off the kiddos or running between meetings, fuel up with a healthy and tasty snack. Wonderful Pistachios will be your new go-to snack. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about these little green wonders. Can power up your day. Classic. Do the ad read at the beginning, and I do it 53 minutes in. I'm getting in trouble, and I'm hopefully wonderful. forgives me. So I apologize. I'm sure that do you have wonderful pistachios at your home? Do I need to send you some? Because I have
I love box. I love wonderful pistachios. I love their snacks.
And you're not even being told to say that. You just genuinely do.
Yeah, I know. I do. I like wonderful pistachios.
Our producer Amanda loves them too. Look at that. Organic. That's an organic ad right there. Organic. All right. So Olivia, I'm not sure if you know this. This is your first time on the pod. But every global championship, I become a degenerate gambler.
Okay.
And I convince myself, because I watch track every day, that I'm going to be able to win a lot of money because I have all this unknown knowledge that the bookkeepers don't know. And so I'm betting $100 on every event. There's one event I couldn't bet on, which was the mixed 4x4, but it's a total of like 48 bets, $100 each. And hopefully I come out positive. In 2021, I lost money. In 2021, I think I lost like, after all the bets came in, I ended up losing $400. In 2022, I made money. I made like $800 or something like that. So between the 2 years, I'm up. I'm up between the 2 years. So 2023 yeah. is the year I go to the moon and I'm going to win big money. And so I had three bets already go through. First bet, the first bet, Brazilian race walker, Bonfim, the 20K race walk. I said he would medal at plus 450. He did. He got third. So I won $450. I then lost my next two bets. I had Odegaard to medal at plus 250. I lost. And I wanted to have some fun. I put Elise Cranny to medal in the 10K at plus 4,000. I would have won $4,000, but it didn't happen. It's okay. So through the first three bets, I'm up $250. So all good. I gambled 300 and I made 450. So no, I gambled I lost 200 and I made 450. So I'm up 250. But here are my bets. You ready for the bets? So ready. If people want to place these bets, you can either choose to do the exact same thing as me or choose the exact opposite. And maybe you'll be the one that wins money and I'll be the one that loses. So 20K race walk. I did my research. I'm going with Perez for gold plus 175. Who is she? I don't know. But she can maybe win me $175. I have Tara Davis to win gold in the long jump at plus 350. She did really well in the qualification round. Right. Quenisha Burks didn't make it through the final. So those odds are actually worse now. So I actually got her at a higher number. So that's great. I got Rudy Winkler to beat another athlete at minus 118. I got Johnson Thompson to medal in the heptathlon. And she's currently in second place, I think. So that's good at plus 115. I have Fred Curley to win gold in the 100 at plus 190. So we need Curley to win. And then here's the big one. Woody Kincaid. It's 100-1 odds. 100-1 odds for him to win gold in the 10K. Now, I get it. He is a long shot, which is why it's 100-1 odds. But his odds right now are 33-1. So people out there think he went from 100-1 to 33-1. If Woody Kincaid wins the 10K tomorrow, I win $10,000. So let's just cheer for that. And then I'll take you out to dinner. And we're going to take the whole Amanda's coming out. We're going to have a steak dinner because I just won $10,000. So that's the
awesome.
Point.
I'm intrigued.
Are you going to
have another individual
dabble in any
for this 100, though? No. It's not my jam.
What's that?
More of like, I don't know. Gambling's not really my jam. So, yeah.
You're smart.
It's interesting. But I'm curious on this men's 100. I thought you had someone else down that you thought was going to win.
I do. So I have two bets. I have two bets on the 100. I have two bets on the 100. So I have
okay.
Curly to win gold plus 190. So I win $190 if he does it. But I have a separate bet, which is this is the whale bet. This is the bet where we're going out to eat for a lot of days. Because I did a parlay where I said if Christian Coleman wins the 100, which I have said throughout the podcast that he's the one guy who I think could beat Curly. Even though he's had some bad races, I still believe it. He ran well in the prelims. If he wins the 100 and Kenny Bednarik wins the 200, which I have said since last year that he was going to win the 200, hey, anything can happen. Injuries, false starts, you never know. If those two things happen, I win $32,000. So, because it's 322-1. I put $100 on it. So,
you hear that, man?
Coleman and Bednarik win. I just won $32,000. What's that?
No, I was talking to Amanda. I was like, get ready for lots of steak dinners on Gordon.
Yeah. Oh, so you believe it's going to happen?
I don't, but I already told you my thoughts.
I'll be tweeting out all my picks.
Okay. And keep us updated, please.
Yeah. So we'll have a graphic made on the upcoming podcast so you can see the status. But right now, one right, two wrong. Got a couple bets coming up, but I'll tweet them out. So if you guys want to go with me or not, it's up to you. But why not? Let's see Kincaid win gold. Let's see Coleman and Bednarik win gold. And then I have $40,000. And then it's just amazing. You know, let's just do that. Why not? It's fun. It made me, I'm watching the hammer throw qualification because I'm like, all right, I got $100 on Winkler. So I got to make sure he gets through to the final. So it gets me invested in all the events. Any last thoughts?
30.
Yeah, you got to give me 4:30. Any last thoughts? What's happening tomorrow? What's on the...
Tomorrow on the agenda.
So tomorrow we'll have... men's 100, men's 10K, women's long jump, men's hammer, heptathlon. We'll dive into it. So, Olivia, thank you for joining me on this podcast. You're a great guest host.
Thanks for having
me. We'll get used to it. We're going to be here. We'll see you in 24 hours. Or I guess we'll live at 12:15 tomorrow, actually. It's earlier tomorrow. So earlier day tomorrow, 12:15, same place. Like and subscribe. Anything else, Olivia?
I will see you tomorrow, 12:15.
All right.
And hopefully you'll be up
Let's do it.
In the morning.
I'll be up. Take care. Bye.